everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, digital editor at thehorse.com. Are you thinking about buying a horse? Whether you're a first-time buyer or returning to horse ownership after time away, making the right decisions from the start can help ensure a rewarding and financially sustainable experience. Knowing what to expect during a pre-purchase examination and why it's important, how to plan and budget for purchase and ongoing expenses associated with horse ownership, and how to evaluate whether a horse is the right match for you can help make the experience more positive. This event is brought to you by Care Credit. To answer your questions, we are joined by expert panelist, Dr. Wendy Krebs of Bend Equine Medical Center. Welcome, Dr. Krebs.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Dr. Krebs, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So I am a lifelong horse addict, probably like many of you. I grew up in Western Oregon in the Canby area, and my mom enabled me by getting me my first pony when I was 2 years old. And I pretty much had a horse and horses ever since. I went to veterinary school at the Oregon State, Washington State program and graduated in 2002. And I have practiced at Bend Equine Medical Center since that time. I currently do upper level dressage. Was lucky enough to compete at Pre-St. George this year, which I'm really pleased with. But yeah, I'm a weekend warrior rider, and then an exclusively horse vet the rest of the time.
Awesome, thank you. We have a lot of new listeners tonight, so if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. Before we begin answering questions, I want to remind everyone of our Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump in. So our first question, Dr. Krebs, is from Mary Kay in Colorado, who asks how she can determine if a horse is the right fit for her as a first-time owner.
Yeah, Mary Kay, that's a great question, and I think it's wonderful that you are considering that before you just jump in with both feet. And this is partially a question for your veterinarian, and then I think partially also would be a great place to form a relationship with a horse trainer. Or coach in your area, because the veterinarian certainly can advise you a bit on the horse's temperament and their medical fitness for what you're planning. But it's also really nice to get the perspective of a trainer to know if it's the right horse for you as a body type, and also temperament-wise to see you guys work together if possible a little bit, because it is important to find the right horse and not have a bad experience and to be able to have a good lasting and positive relationship with that horse. So again, I'd say reach out to both a trainer, see if you can find somebody that you can have a good relationship with and work with you, potentially as an agent on purchasing that horse, and then also talk to your veterinarian as part of your pre-purchase exam about that aspect.
Clay in Kentucky wants to know what he should expect to pay for a pre-purchase exam.
That's a great question, and the answer is a little bit complicated. So a very basic pre-purchase exam may be in the range of $150. I would say most of them are closer to sort of $300 to $500 for the examination and report. And then some potential buyers choose to add diagnostics onto that exam. So those might be radiographs, they might be blood work, they might be genetic testing. So there are a variety of things that, depending on what you're paying for the horse and your intended use of the horse, including is that going to be a resale horse or something like that, that you may want to add on to that basic pre-purchase exam fee. So a very comprehensive pre-purchase package, including those diagnostics, might be several thousand dollars. But it's a great exercise to talk to your vet in advance and find out what the options are and what those might cost. And then as the exam progresses with your vet, you can talk about what Like if the horse has any sort of questionable soundness during the exam, you might want to pursue radiographs, for example, or questionable hoof confirmation, et cetera, so that those exam findings can kind of help guide you in what diagnostics might be necessary to make sure you make the right purchase.
Louise in New York asks how many times potential buyers should visit or try a horse before purchasing.
Yeah, you know, in the good old days, it was really nice to be able to do a trial of a horse for a period of time. Sometimes if the seller and the buyer's agents have a good relationship, if that's the kind of situation, you can negotiate a bit of a trial, and that's really the best scenario to know how the horse is going to act in your possession on your property, being away from its home farm. And sometimes that's feasible and sometimes it's not. It may be a situation that if it is allowed that you assume responsibility for the horse and may want to purchase a short-term insurance policy in case anything were to happen during that trial period. If that's not an option to do a more extended trial, then I would say it would be great to try it at least a couple of times, probably in different circumstances and environment to make sure it's the right one for you.
Tara in Utah wants to know if joint ownership of a horse is a smart decision financially. What are some of the most important considerations if she's going to do that?
Mm-hmm. So we don't very often see joint ownership of horses, unless it's sometimes a syndicate or a horse potentially going to be, you know, a resale project. So there are multiple investors on the horse. But if you're contemplating it more for a personal horse situation, I would think long and hard about that. You know, owners may have different ideas about care levels, you know, veterinary care levels even. Or, you know, you have to think about if one of you is no longer able to ride, besides it's not the right horse for you personally, while it might be the right horse still for the other partner. I think that sounds like a bit of a tricky situation to me, to be totally honest. It would be nice to share the finances. And I think what I would suggest to you as an alternative to actual joint ownership is to consider that one of you become the purchaser and then do a care lease situation, sharing the care costs with that second person and maybe adding on a little bit to the care costs to help subsidize the price of the horse. I think that would give you guys both a little bit more flexibility in case, you know, changes need to happen.
Linda in Georgia wants to know what the first steps are for caring for her new horse when she picks him up to come home. I know this is always really daunting, even if it's not your first horse.
Yeah, there is so much that goes into caring for a horse. And I think that process needs to start, you know, well before you bring that horse home. So making sure that you have appropriate and safe fencing and appropriate pastures, you know, that don't have any toxic weeds and have good forage, for example, you know, safe stabling situation for the horse, and that you've figured out what an appropriate feed is for that horse. Hopefully that's something that the seller will help you with in terms of what that horse typically eats, et cetera. We actually just did a series on Bendy Quine's Facebook about preventable emergencies. And that might be a good thing for you to look at, because there are a lot of things that you can do to safely set up your property to avoid injuries, accidents, grain overload, things like that that you might not necessarily think about, you know, as a first-time horse owner or relatively new horse owner. Horses are so good at getting themselves into bad situations. So I think starting out ahead of time with somebody that knows horses very well and having them come look at your property with you and getting that all lined up before you contemplate bringing a horse home is a good idea. You also probably want to schedule a vet checkup with your horse relatively early within your ownership and see what if they have any special medical needs or their dental needs taken care of, and they can also consult with you on optimizing nutrition plan.
Can you expand a little bit more on feeding your new horse? Is it best to continue feeding them what they've been used to, or should you switch them over to what you plan to feed them long term?
That's a great question. So horses do not like abrupt changes in their diet. So even if when you talk with your veterinarian, you decide that you might need to alter their diet a little bit long term, it's very important to do that gradually. We try to make changes over like a 7-day to 14-day period for most horses, especially if they're going to be dramatic in terms of switching from grass hay to alfalfa, for example, or adding grain. Horses have very delicate GI tracts, and so they tend to colic with any sort of abrupt change. So that's a great point.
Awesome. Thank you. Faye in South Carolina asks how the age of a horse can influence the way a veterinarian interprets a pre-purchase exam.
Yeah. So as a practicing vet, I've done pre-purchases on everything from weanlings to horses in their 20s. And Faye's right, that really can affect how much you're able to evaluate the horse and then how you look at those findings. So for example, for a young, barely halter broke or not halter broke horse, it's going to limit the extent of the examination we can do in terms of the lameness, flexion testing, things like that. Young horses, even if they are halter broke, aren't always used to trotting in hand, like we need to do for a thorough pre-purchase exam that we would do for an older horse. So we do the best that we can in those situations, but sometimes they have to be taken with a grain of salt. And then when we are looking at the soundness in older horses, especially that it had a lot of show ring miles and things like that, we are not going to expect them to be as sound as we might a 2-year-old. It's just not realistic in most cases. They are not going to flex completely negative. And so we need to consider, you know, what level of soundness is feasible for their proposed new career. So if you're buying an 18-year-old horse, you hopefully aren't, you know, expecting it to do super intense work at this point. And it becomes a really important discussion, back and forth discussion with your vet of what sort of maintenance this horse might need to keep doing what you would like of it, what frequency, you know, what that expense will be, and whether they foresee, using their best crystal ball interpretation, you know, what the useful lifespan of that horse might be. So definitely that's a very nuanced discussion in these older horses that are never going to have a completely clean pre-purchase or negative function test.
Linda in Montana wants to know if she should ask her veterinarian to run routine lab work during their pre-purchase exam.
Yeah, Linda, depending on, again, the health of that horse and the intended use, I am a strong proponent for running at least some basic blood work during a pre-purchase exam. So what I would typically recommend to my clients is a basic wellness panel. So that would be like a CBC, a complete blood count, and that's looking at red and white blood cells and platelets. Make sure they're not anemic or have a high white blood cell count that might be associated with a occult infection. It also includes a serum chemistry. So a serum chemistry is looking at liver and kidney function. It's looking at protein levels and electrolytes. And so that would help you discover if a horse, for example, had some underlying kidney disease or liver disease that you really would want to find out as part of that pre-purchase and not be surprised later. The other advantage of doing that blood work is that you do have a baseline. So if 18 months down the road, you find out that your horse has kidney or liver disease, you know, you have that, you know, that it was normal essentially at the time you purchased it. So that can help with diagnosing what the problem is exactly and the severity. Also a great idea to include a Coggins test, which is testing for equine infectious anemia. So that's a very uncommon, but unfortunately deadly disease. And we are seeing a little bit of an outbreak of that in the United States right now. So again, that would, if your horse sadly came up positive or not, in most cases that necessitates you euthanizing that horse. So it's a pretty inexpensive test. You're also going to need that for any travel across state lines for health certificates, et cetera. And then some boarding facilities will also just require that negative clogins. So I think it's great to get that baseline as part of your pre-purchase, and it's not terrifically expensive.
Darren in Connecticut wants to know if lameness exams during pre-purchases are accurate for gated horses. Do you have any special considerations for these horses?
Yeah. So we actually see a fair number of gated horses in this area because there is a lot of trail riding. And gated horses are a very popular option for mature individuals for trail horses because they're easy on the back. They are lovely horses, usually have very nice temperaments, and we enjoy working with them. But lameness exams and neurologic exams in gated horses are a bit tricky, and it's helpful to have some experience looking at gated horses because they do definitely move very differently. Whenever possible, we do try to get them to actually do a trot during a lameness exam because that is the easiest gait in horses to pick up a lameness. Some of them will, and some of the more strongly gated horses just will not trot for you. So in that case, we do have to watch them gating, and it takes a bit to get used to. So if your veterinarian has never worked with gated horses, you might consider seeking out somebody who has for that pre-purchase. Neurologic exams are also a little bit tricky. These horses tend to be a little bit loosey-goosey. And in other breeds, you know, what we would consider a very low grade neurologic condition. So, again, knowing what sort of their normal responses are to the tail sway test and the circumduction and the other parts of the neurologic exam is helpful for perspective on them. So, again, would just encourage you to find somebody who does have experience with them.
So our next question is about a topic that I know a lot of people have questions about, and that's insurance. Kathy in New York is buying a horse that she would like to use for a fox hunter and wants to know if loss of use insurance is something she should consider.
Yeah. So loss of use insurance, for those of you that aren't familiar, is a special rider that is put on usually an underlying insurance policy. So put onto, for example, a mortality, you know, plus or minus medical surgery policy. And the loss of use would, as the name implies, come into effect if the horse sustains either injury or illness that makes them unusable for their intended purpose, but it's not something so bad that they need to be euthanized, medically speaking. And so as you can kind of imagine, that can be a tricky definition and subject to a lot of debate between the insurance company and the owner of the horse in terms of what constitutes a true loss of use versus, you know, a downgrade of use, for example. And the other tricky thing about these policies is that they do sometimes require that the horse be surrendered back to the insurance company in order to pay out that claim. And that horse is then theirs to do with what they will, potentially. It's uncomfortable to a lot of owners to lose possession of that horse that they may still really care for. They just can no longer use it anymore. I think these policies are actually becoming less frequently offered by insurance companies, and they're tending to limit them to very high dollar horses, from what I can see. And then the payout is typically not the full insured mortality value of the horse, it's a portion thereof. So probably not a super realistic type of policy for most horse owners. I do think I'm going to put in a plug here for general insurance, though, not just a mortality policy, but even more importantly, in my mind, a medical and surgical insurance policy. It is heartbreaking to work with cases that really just come down to finances, a condition that requires, you know, either surgery or extended medical care can get really expensive. It's, you know, unfortunate when that's just not within the scope of the owner's, you know, resources. that had the horse been insured would have been something they could have pursued with a good prognosis. There are quote-unquote free insurance policies for colic surgery in particular, available from several of the supplement manufacturers here in the U.S. And so while it's better to have a more comprehensive insurance policy, I would encourage you, if those aren't an option, to at least consider those that come free with a subscription, essentially, to a product, a wellness product.
Just following up on this, can you get insurance at any point in horse ownership, or is that something that you need to get when you first purchase the horse?
Yeah, you can typically insure a horse at any point in its ownership. Many of the companies will not insure older horses, so age does become a factor, and it's generally going to be less expensive to insure a younger horse than an older horse. And there are a lot of different policies available out there. So it's important to look at your options really carefully and understand what they cover and not cover. Equine insurance is very different than human medical insurance in that they can, if, for example, horses have an injury to the left front leg, after they have essentially paid on that claim for a year, they will sometimes discontinue coverage for that particular limb or that particular problem, and you can never again be covered for that scenario. So in some cases, when we've seen horses that have had multiple injuries or conditions over the years, the insurance company is gradually disqualifying, you know, bit by bit, the entire body of the horse, where it becomes a situation that they would only be covered, you know, if they had a struck by lightning scenario or something very extreme. So it is very important that you understand those differences in the insurance of horses, but still a great idea for most horses.
Thank you for explaining that. I know that's something that even I get confused on sometimes, so I'm sure our listeners appreciate that.
Yeah, it's very complex.
Mary in Vermont wants to know what she should discuss with a horse's seller that most people might forget.
Yeah, that is really important to have an in-depth discussion. Preferably, you actually get to speak with the seller and not just an agent, because things do get lost in translation sometimes. But important to ask about their medical history, and that would include not just lameness, any illness that they may have had, any colics, and preventive care, where they are on dentistry. You know, has anything been even done in that mouth in the last several years? What is their vaccine history? Are they routinely on any medications, or have they needed to be in the past, even if they're not currently on them? Do they have any behavioral issues? You know, is the horse a perfect sweetheart at home, but when you take it to a show, they lose their mind? Important to ask about those things. If you are having a pre-purchase exam, that's actually part of our pre-purchase exam, is that the veterinarian's office will reach out to the seller, even if they're not present at the time of the exam, and have them complete a document with the answers to all these questions. And then you do have it legally in writing as part of the transaction as well. And so if something unfortunate should happen in the future that was not disclosed, that is part of the medical record, which is a legal document, and you have recourse to that. So I would encourage you to make sure your pre-purchase includes that as well.
Amy in South Carolina asks how veterinarians interpret pathologies found on neck radiographs during a pre-purchase exam.
Amy, that is a very loaded question, and it's a great one. it's a topic that's actually kind of rapidly evolving and a point of discussion in the veterinary field right now. So, you know, neck radiographs on horses have become, over, I would say, probably the last 15 years, a pretty common part of a pre-purchase exam, especially for higher dollar performance horses. But we're finding, as the more we look, the more we find. And so it turns out that arthritis of the neck is actually quite common in performance horses. So for example, up to 68% of warm blood horses have osteoarthritis in those articular process joints that join the vertebra and the neck. So it is a very common finding. It is more uncommon to find a horse that has been working that doesn't have changes in its neck. The other thing that we will pick up on neck radiographs, there are some abnormalities, congenital abnormalities that horses are born with of the neck that there's great debate right now on whether they're consequential to the horse's future health and wellness or whether they're not. One of those specifically that you may have heard about is transposition of the ventral lamina of C6 and 7. And so that's essentially bits of the bones off of C6 actually are embryologically moved back to the C7 area. And so that alters the attachment of some of the muscles in the neck. And the concern would be that that will lead to destabilization of the neck and potentially earlier development of severe arthritis in the neck and or becoming a wobbler. And that particular deformation is present in between 13 and 33% of hot-blooded horses, essentially thoroughbreds, and then also warm bloods. So it's something that some buyers will, you know, if they've had a bad experience with a horse in the past, that's a hard no from them if they were to see that on a pre-purchase exam. More recently, some work has come out just in the last year or two suggesting that it's probably not as problematic as some people are claiming and may just be more of an incidental finding. There's actually even a lot of debate right now about whether neck x-rays should be part of a pre-purchase exam at all because they can sort of be overinterpreted. Neck radiographs are a little bit tricky to take, to be honest, as veterinarians, to get good quality neck radiographs. Especially on farm calls, can be tricky. And so we're left interpreting and potentially over-interpreting poor radiographic images. Most of the time, I personally do advocate in most cases for taking good quality neck radiographs, but I also require that we send those out for review by a radiologist to get their opinion on the changes there and to document that as part of the pre-purchase exam.
So you mentioned having another opinion on the radiographs. Is it common for buyers to get a second opinion on radiographs when they see changes that you're unsure if they could be concerning or not?
Yeah, it is. And actually, some veterinarians will require sending out all of the x-rays that are taken as a pre-purchase just to get, again, you know, a professional radiologist interpretation and written report on those. That's just kind of their standard of practice. They want to be sure they haven't missed anything because it is kind of a high stakes scenario. So that's variable and something you can talk with your vet about whether they recommend that or offer that referral service. But it's not a bad idea, especially in these, you know, high dollar situations to make sure that you have, you know, multiple potentially well-informed opinions so that you can see the whole picture.
Lori in Montana wants to know if it's a good idea to test a horse for PSSM during a pre-purchase if the breed is predisposed to this disease.
Yeah, Lori, I'm an advocate for kind of getting a good database on your horse that you're purchasing. And because that disease in particular is one that might affect how you manage your horse and choose its diet, I do think it's a good idea to know. You know, that horse may or may not ever have clinical problems with PSSM, depending, even if they, you know, do genetically speaking test positive for it. But I think it's important for you to be aware of that. And that test and many of the genetic tests that are available are either done on blood or even more simply just on hair root DNA. And they're really not overwhelmingly expensive. Depending on what breed you are contemplating buying, I think you should talk with the vet you're working with and find out, you know, for quarter horse, for example, has it had the 5+ panel testing done as part of this registration process? And is that available to you? What might you want to consider having that done, especially if it's a horse that you are thinking about breeding in the future? That can have some major implications for, who you might want to breed it to, et cetera. And then Arabians also have a number of genetic diseases that can be tested for. So that should be part of your discussion with the vet, not just for PSSM, but for a variety of different conditions.
Nancy in Wisconsin asked what common costs she should budget for before buying a horse. And this could include the long-term recurrent costs or emergency type situations.
Yeah, so horses are really good at spending your money. And then, so there is a common sort of expected cost, and then they're really good at getting creative about some extra costs on top of that. And that's part of where that insurance comes in and can be a great plan of, to add to your horse ownership. So the very basic ones are first, think about where that horse is going to live. Can it live out in your pasture on grass? Does it live in a dry lot and you have to buy hay for it? Hay for the average horse is going to run somewhere around $1,000 to $1,500 a year just for that expense alone. On top of that, you're going to add your supplements that you might feed it. That might be something really basic that's 50 cents or a dollar a day, or it could be, I don't even want to tell you how much I spend per day on supplements for my horse. It can really add up. And then if you're boarding the horse, again, are you going to board it at a show facility that may be $2,000 a month? Or are you going to board it at more of a backyard facility that might be, $300 or $400 a month? You have to think about the farrier. Is this a horse that's going to get trimmed 3 or 4 times a year? And that's pretty affordable, say around $75 a time. Or is it a horse that needs a really specialized therapeutic shoeing job every 5 to 6 weeks? So sometimes I think actually it's not uncommon that people are spending more with the farrier than they are actually with the veterinarian. So look carefully at its feet, understand what the needs are. Does it have navicular changes, for example, on x-rays that are going to necessitate special shoeing for its lifetime? And then what are you going to be doing with that horse? Are you planning to just trail ride locally? Are you planning on showing the horse? And then, God forbid it become ill. Of course, that can kind of go anywhere. Basic veterinary care tends to be fairly affordable. And we have a question a little bit later on about that, too. But that can typically be less than $1,000 per year. But again, really depends on what you're going to be doing with the horse. Do you need health certificates to, cross state lines every month or so? Because you're going to show it. So there's a huge sort of range of potential expenses. I would plan on probably not less than a minimum of, $400 to $500 a month to be realistic.
Nicolette in Colorado asks what common mistakes first-time horse buyers commonly make.
Yeah. I think it's very common to buy horses without a pre-purchase exam, maybe from a friend of a friend situation, and then unfortunately not understand that horse's capabilities and or, what medical care it might need. Sadly, nobody knew that the horse was lame, but once it's put into work, it's lame. So we see a lot of new horse owners that end up with a horse that it's inappropriate for them in some fashion. And that is sad because, had there been better sort of due diligence prior to the purchase, they wouldn't have ended up in that situation. So consulting with a trainer to make sure that this horse seems compatible with you from somebody that has a lot of experience in that respect. And then also being sure you have that pre-purchase done are really important. And that's going to set you off, on a more positive trajectory. You still might end up with a horse that is not right for you. and, you know, down the road need to move on to another horse. But that's probably the most common thing. I think the other consideration is making sure you understand the financial commitment that comes with horses. They are a luxury item, unfortunately, and they can get spendy in a hurry. So making sure that you understand, you know, good equine basic care so you can hopefully prevent those emergencies that might happen or just those management issues that are going to end up in illness is important, and getting good mentorship as you sort of ease your way into horse ownership. You know, I'm 40 plus years into horse ownership and 23 years into vet med, and they still teach me something every day. So there's a lot to know about horses.
So speaking of being horses being expensive, if you're not prepared for, say, an emergency medical bill, what options do you have to cover those?
Yeah, so I think it's a good idea to start a savings account for your horse and or have a credit card with a decent credit limit that you set aside specifically for the use of that horse in an emergency situation. That might be just a regular credit card. I do think CareCredit is a nice option for our clients in an emergency situation. It might look like borrowing from family members, talking in advance, hopefully, to a family member that, you know, should something really dire arise, are they going to be able to potentially give you a loan in that situation? And just thinking in advance about these things is so important. You know, we see a lot of middle of the night emergencies, and maybe there's just been a rough time for the family recently financially that put you in a difficult situation. And it was just absolutely heartbreaking, you know, to not be able to provide care for that horse because of financial reasons. So just thinking about that and making a plan is super important.
Jennifer in Kentucky is interested in buying a 7-year-old mare, primarily to ride and compete with at the local level. The mare has very nice bloodlines, so she'd like to have the option of getting a foal out of her as well. Are there any additional tests that she should ask her vet to include during the pre-purchase?
Yeah, absolutely. Really important. I'm going to reach back to the genetic testing that we talked about, particularly with some breeds, knowing what conditions they may or may not have, and how that's going to affect what crosses you might make with them. You know, warm blood, do they have warm blood fragile foal disease, you know, in their genetic history? And then the other important thing to do is do a breeding soundness exam. So what that consists of is doing a exam of the external genitalia of the mare, making sure, for example, that her vulva has a nice seal, and that she hasn't had a tear of her vulva or her cervix or something in the past that might affect her ability to be bred and carry a foal. And then we also do an ultrasound of the reproductive tract transrectally. So we're going in and looking at both ovaries to make sure that they are of normal size and appearance, and that also the uterus appears normal. So occasionally, it will happen that we have mares that are missing parts of their reproductive tract or have issues there that are going to be, you know, affect their suitability or ability to carry a foal. So important to speak with your vet about that if it's something you're considering.
Brian in Ohio wants to know if you have any non-negotiable red flags when evaluating a prospective horse for a client.
Yeah, Brian, I think one of the most important is the safety. I feel very responsible as a veterinarian for making sure that I feel like this is going to be a safe, compatible match for the horse and the owner, both because, you know, I would hate for an owner to ever be hurt by their horse when it could have been avoided, and also because those situations will end up potentially with the horse, you know, falling into a bad situation. So if I am perceiving that it's, you know, for example, a very inexperienced horse owner who is considering purchasing a, you know, poorly broke, really hot reactive horse, I think that is a terrible match. And sometimes, you know, people are limited by budget and so are looking for, you know, looking in their price range at horses that don't have a lot of training. But I would much rather see a new horse owner choose an older horse that might be near the end of its sort of usable lifespan, and it may be of, you know, sort of decreased but still usable soundness. I think that's a way better way to get into horses than starting with a green, you know, potentially fractious horse. So I'm pretty blunt with people during pre-purchase exams. If I can tell, it's just really not going to be a good match for them. The other non-negotiable things, you know, are things that would come up health-wise or soundness-wise on the exam. Again, there are very few 100% sound in all circumstances horses out there. But horses that have a significant lameness that's not manageable, or things like a heart condition, you know, that could cause them to acutely collapse, things like that, are huge safety concerns for me.
Morgan in California asks, when evaluating a young horse to purchase under 2 years old or so, how can you determine if they have a permanent conformation flaw versus just that young horse awkwardness that they will grow out of?
Yeah, that is a great question. So I would say it is a bit more of a concern when we're looking at younger horses even than 2 years old. So when we're looking at weanlings and yearlings that are still pretty early in their growth process, you know, are they going to stay butt high, for example, or are they going to stay toed out? Those things can definitely change up to, you know, a year and a half old. Once they're 2 years old, you're basically they're basically going to get a bit bigger and might level out a little bit, but you're not going to typically see really major conformation changes at that point. So I the other consideration in young horses is, are they going to develop OCD, which is a condition that horses' cartilage fails to mature into normal bones. So they can get OCD chips, people call them, in multiple joints. And we often, we may not see those if we radiograph in horses less than a year old. They can appear even up to a year and a half of age. So that's definitely a risk in buying, particularly a six-month-old or even younger than that, that they could develop OCD, for example, while they're in that rapid growth phase. Young horse awkwardness in general, when you're looking at a two-year-old, and we kind of touched on this earlier, they might not be easy to evaluate with your soundness exam. They may not trot well in the hand. They may not know how to lunge. So it can be hard to see sort of their baseline normal gait. And you're right, Morgan, and they can be a little bit uncoordinated just as young horses. And we as veterinarians have to help you determine, do they potentially have a neurologic condition or are they just a little bit awkward and uncoordinated? So that can be a bit difficult to suss out, but your veterinarian should be able to help you with that.
Olivia in New Jersey says she's considering purchasing a horse who had poor hoof quality during the pre-purchase exam, but decided against it. In the future, how can she tell if this is something that's caused by an underlying problem or one that could be fixed with good farriery?
Yeah, this is a good time to have an in-depth conversation with the seller and kind of understand, have they been doing, you know, providing good farrier to the horse? Are they having it done on a regular basis? Or have they been trying to save money and stretching out the interval of shoeing too long and therefore kind of compromising the horse's hoof conformation and quality? Or in even in the face of very, you know, responsible farrier care, has this horse still continued to have problems? You know, sometimes certainly vitamin mineral supplementation can make a difference in hoof quality, and then just being really having a good diligent farrier program can make a world of difference for some horses. And again, you can get your vet into this conformation as well. They should be able to help you in understanding, you know, is there something underlying that's likely to not be fixable? Or is it something that you're willing to kind of try to work through with the talented barrier, good nutrition program, etc.
Jen in Georgia wants to know what questions she should ask a boarding facility when looking for a place to board her new horse. This question, I'm really interested to see your answer, because when I bought my horse 2 years ago, I spent so long looking for the right fit. I know a lot of people struggle with this as well.
Yeah, it can be really challenging to find a place that meets your needs, you know, especially as we have more and more sort of farmland converted to, you know, urban housing and so forth. Good boarding facilities that are in an appropriate location for you are becoming harder and harder to find. And the costs of boarding really are going up exponentially too lately, both, you know, cost of labor, and then those property values are really affecting what we have to pay for board. I think you always should go do a site visit and plan on that being sort of an in-depth site visit to the boarding facility. So make an appointment to meet with the owner or the manager, walk around sort of everywhere and inspect and look at, you know, things like the fence maintenance and what are the water troughs look like? Are they well cleaned and filled, or are they a little questionable? How well are they doing, you know, cleaning up the manure? How much bedding are they putting in the stalls? Is it what would meet your needs? Bedding is increasingly expensive these days too. And so lots of times boarding facilities are trying to cut back on the amount of shavings that they use. And I, you know, get into situations where owners are really frustrated. Their horses are getting rub sores on their hocks or their fetlocks because there's not enough, you know, shavings in the stall. But the boarding facility owner just can't afford, you know, to put more in. So you want to make sure you're on the same page and the quality of care in the horse. Look at the actual riding facilities. You know, are the arenas well maintained? Is the footing good? Does it suit your needs? Is it actually being, you know, worked and watered on a basis that is, you know, acceptable to you? Or is it just going to be a dust bowl when you try and ride and miserable? Find out for sure what services are provided, because there's, you know, a wild variation in what is included in the basic board fee. Some facilities are going to include blanketing, holding for the farrier, holding for the vet, you know, vitamins and rain, and others are going to charge extra, you know, for each one of those services, anything beyond basic board. Also make sure that the hay that they're feeding is acceptable to you. You know, if your horse needs a low sugar hay, for example, is that something that they can provide, or are you going to have to buy your own? And they don't even have a place to store it, so you have to bring it a bale at a time. Same thing, if your horse needs alfalfa, for example, or extra grain, you know, find out what that's going to look like for you. I think also, like, knowing what the skill level, the knowledge level of the staff that are going to be caring for your horse is like is also really important, because when it comes down to it, they're the ones, you know, evaluating your horse daily, handling it. You know, do they have good skills, or, you know, are they scaring your horse, setting it back, or just being negligent? And finding out how long that boarding facility has been in business, you know, can you speak to current boarders who've been there for 5 or 6 years and can provide a good reference? Or is there, you know, a huge amount of turnover there that might indicate it's not going to be a good place for you long term? So it's a really important decision. And can be a hard one.
Definitely. Our next question is from Lindsay in our live audience, who is managing a herd at a therapeutic riding facility. The organization is looking to purchase another horse with a budget of $10,000 for walk, trot, canter, and groundwork with their participants. Where is a good place for her to start looking locally when she doesn't have a good network with sellers in the area yet?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think I would try to reach out to your local, you know, trainers and coaches, riding facilities, because obviously you're looking for something that's really safe and well broke. And so it may be that they have something that's ready to phase out of a performance career, for example, and move into more of a therapeutic riding sort of lower level activity. So I think that would be the first place where I would reach out to. potentially a rescue or sanctuary, though a lot of those horses, are there because they're either unsound or not broke, unfortunately.
Leslie in Pennsylvania asks if the pre-purchase exam for a pleasure horse would differ from that of a performance horse. What should she expect to be included in the pre-purchase for a pleasure or trail horse?
Yeah, so that is a great question, and it might actually vary a little bit depending on your veterinarian. Our clinic used to have a couple of different levels of pre-purchase exams. But after kind of mulling that over a bit, we really decided that we thought that all pre-purchase exams should be in depth. Rather than sort of a cursory look over, we want to make sure that all of those potential purchasers are really well informed, at least in the basic exam and their logic testing on the horse. All of our exams, for example, we're listening to heart and lungs. Looking at eyes, looking in the mouth, evaluating the horse's soundness at a walk and a trot and a canter, both in hand and also on a lunge line in circles, and on different surfaces, so hard surfaces, soft surfaces, and then that neurologic exam actually takes a little bit of time too, but I think that's really an important thing that should not be skipped. Also, flexion testing of all four limbs to see if there's sort of any subtle underlying lameness or arthritis that needs to be considered in the future. A really thorough pre-purchase exam should take at least an hour. There's going to be a lot of time devoted to discussion of the findings and sort of educating that potential buyer about this particular horse, what its needs are going to be, and really trying to decide. Is it going to be suitable? We talk a lot about not saying a horse is passing a pre-purchase or failing a pre-purchase, even though in some ways it would be nice to simplify it to that. And there are cases like we talked about earlier that are absolute red flags and non-negotiable and will result in a fail. But more often it's just sort of a fact-finding mission to understand as much as you can about this horse and the likelihood of them being suitable for what you want them for. But some veterinarians may offer sort of a more basic one. That could just be a shorter, slightly less thorough exam for a pleasure horse. But I would encourage you to sort of invest those funds up front and getting a really good representation of what that horse is and what their needs are going to be, and not sort of be a penny-wise and pound-foolish decision there.
Stephanie in Florida wants to know how to choose a vet to do a pre-purchase exam if buying a horse far from your home vet or if you don't have a vet yet. Is it okay to have the vet perform a pre-purchase when you can't be there?
Yeah, that is a great question, and one I sort of run into frequently. So your best resource is actually going to be reaching out to your home veterinarian in most cases and finding out if they have an acquaintance or a colleague in the area that you're considering purchasing that horse in. They might be able to give you recommendations of, for example, even if they don't know a particular vet, a clinic that's really reputable. So I would definitely start there. We run into situations sometimes with sellers that will recommend essentially that their vet do the pre-purchase exam. I would recommend you stay away from that situation as much as possible. You really want to choose a vet that has zero conflict of interest and works for you and you alone, because sometimes those situations just get tricky. At our practice, for example, we do have a policy that we will not do a pre-purchase with our clients as the seller because we just want to maintain complete impartiality. So try to choose somebody that's going to work for you. And then it is okay to do a remote pre-purchase. That's a situation, again, that we come across not infrequently. Even if you have been able to go and try the horse, it can be hard to schedule the pre-purchase and make a second trip back there, etc. So if that's a situation you're in, I would talk to the vet that's going to do it in advance. Make sure they understand your desires for the horse, and sort of your parameters. And then we're usually doing phone calls actually during the exam to talk to the potential buyer. So if something comes up on the basic physical or on the flexion testing, for example, that's a good time to have a conversation, find out if you want to continue with the exam or do you want to stop right there? Do you want to do x-rays to further investigate or not? Lots of times we will video exams so that you can see them or have your vet look at them as well. So with sort of technology we have these days, definitely it makes remote pre-purchases more feasible and pretty safe in most cases, as long as you stay involved.
Our last question of the night is from Jennifer in California, who asks if you recommend testing horses for sedatives or NSAIDs during the pre-purchase or test ride, or both, and how would you go about doing this?
Yeah, that's a great idea. And definitely, it is a common request to do a drug testing panel. So we are looking for anything that might calm the horse, sedate it. And some of those drugs can actually last, weeks to a month in the horse's system. The NSAIDs are the analgesics, pain relieving drugs. Those typically don't have as long a potential duration of effect as sedatives might. But certainly the, seller could slip the horse some bute the morning of the pre-purchase exam. That's going to affect the results of that exam. So this comes down in a lot of cases to the amount of trust that the buyer has in the seller or the seller's agent, and is another good situation where a trial can be really useful. So, if you've been able to try the horse over, for example, a week or two, for sure that they're not going to be affected by any pain drugs for that period of time, although the sedatives could still be having some effect if given prior to you starting that. So the blood test is pretty simple. It is not inexpensive. It's several hundred dollars, and it's a fairly complete list of what's tested for, but it's not completely exhaustive. Sometimes we will just hold blood for the buyer for a month or so until they've had the horse in their possession. And if everything is going well, its temperament hasn't changed, it hasn't gone lame, then, they will let us know they don't want to pursue with a blood test, but we do have it on hand, in case there is a question.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. We've covered a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned as much as I have. Thank you so much, Dr. Krebs, for joining me tonight.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed these questions. They were great questions, and I'm happy to help educate people a little bit.
And thank you to Care Credit for sponsoring this event. Finally, thank you to our audience for listening and sending in these questions, and especially thank you to our new listeners tonight. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the horse, have a great night.